Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. That was an interview that we had actually conducted a week ago. And some of you had asked for it again because it is one of those, unfortunately, quite a difficult conversation, very sad. And so it was by popular demand. And so we decided to bring it to you. But, you know, still a lot of people sending notes and questions about the fact that, you know, how is it that I am saying to you that so much money was spent, was sent back to Treasury by municipalities that was meant for our infrastructure. And so somebody asked as well, you know, what was that for? Was it so that the money can be stolen? I said, no. The reason the money goes back is because municipality doesn't know how to comply with filling in and doing all the things that are required for the municipality to actually use the money. They would not have a project, number one. They wouldn't have a proper project. And number two, actually, unfortunately, some of them are so used to stealing, it's difficult now. You've got more red tape. It's difficult to steal the money. And so they give up, the money goes back. They give up, the money goes back. So yes, you do have municipalities that have got real problems, real infrastructure problems. Free State does not even have proper financial statements. It's one of the municipalities. The Northwest is another one. If you go to the Northwest, I don't have to tell you. It's dysfunctional. And yet municipalities return grant monies back to Treasury. That's what's actually happening. So, I mean, I'd love to hear from you. 086-000-00959. Because seemingly the money... So when you hear municipalities say there is no money... Well, yes, to some extent there's no money. But if they're able to send back money to the tune of 3.5 billion rand, then surely then the problem is not money. Then there are other problems. So what exactly is going on here? That's really the question we should be asking ourselves. And why are we allowing municipalities to get away with sending money back to Treasury when there is so much that needs to be done? Why? When do we as citizens familiarize ourselves with the fact that a municipality has sent back money? By the way, Tshwane is one of those municipalities, by the way. I'm just saying. A municipality has sent back money and Tshwane says, no, well, you know, they couldn't spend money where there wasn't a project plan and so on. And one of the things they're also saying is that because of the fact that they're musical chairs, and Julius mentioned this from Outer, because they're musical chairs, every time a new mayor comes in, a new executive comes in, they have a new plan, and so it goes. And so sometimes, that was the reason Tshwane gave, sometimes they were not able to do the work because they had a new mayor who was appointed very recently. So this was not something that they could do themselves. They didn't have a project plan. They didn't have a clear guidelines to what it is they were going to do with that money. That's why the money went back to Treasury. But in the end, I don't think you and I should accept the fact that municipalities send back money that is supposed to be fixing infrastructure so that you and I can have a better experience. And so that's really what I'm thinking. I'd love to hear from you. 086-000-00959. That's the number to dial. And you can also send a voice note on 063-688-0959. I'm going to be speaking to Deputy Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, Steve Litsike, who was really warmly welcomed by many, many community activists in the country who say this, they couldn't have asked for a better person to be a voice for the LGBTQI plus community in South Africa. This is someone who will really very positively represent them in government and so on. And so I just want us to have a broader conversation, because I said, I think earlier on, I also have to ask, you know, how do I refer to Steve? And we were given proper indication that I refer to Steve as she. And those are some of the pronouns that you and I need to familiarize ourselves with, the non-binary pronouns and the like, and how to use them and how to ask. We just need to be inclusive enough, knowing that this country belongs to us all. And for those of us who, you know, what we would call in the mainstream, start familiarizing ourselves and being inclusive, even in language, of others. So we do have Deputy Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, Steve Letsike, on the line with us. Thank you so much, Deputy Minister, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you, Pamela, and to the listeners of Kaya FM. So thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, this is going to be a very broad conversation around how South Africa should start embracing the LGBTQ plus community and in what ways we should do that. So it's not enough that the Constitution says that everybody's rights are equal, because we are not really seeing that. And the ways in which we should start being inclusive in exactly that, in how we speak, how we conduct ourselves, how we treat others. So your appointment as Deputy Minister, you know, for you as someone who's been an advocate, what is that going to mean for the LGBTQ plus community, for communities with disability as well? Because now you've got quite a big portfolio, right? Young women, women and children and the youth as well. How are you going to make sure that these voices are heard and we fully understand and appreciate what's required of us to be inclusive to all of these communities?
Well, I think first we have to appreciate that, you know, the Constitution makes provision, you know, of freedoms of association and of expression. Mm. So one is not just... just appointed just by virtue.
Yeah.
It's also about your association. So you can appreciate that I'm affiliated and I'm associated with a political party. And this political party is the ANC, is the oldest liberation movement we have in the world, right? Mm. Amongst others. But at the same time, here in Africa, a very same organization that has been fighting to liberate everyone, that we see you, ANC is a broad church, it is inclusive, and that when we speak about freedom charter and we aspire that everyone will be themselves and they can contribute to the prosperity of South Africa. Mm. And that's the first point of departure. Mm. The second point of departure is that we have a constitution that was enacted in 96. And the Constitution that speaks, if you look at the preamble of the Constitution, it reminds us that we are united in our diversity and we see human beings for who they are. And when you then move towards the section of our Constitution, which is Chapter 2, that speaks about the Bill of Rights, it says that no one should be discriminated on the basis of their sexual orientation, gender identity, you know, and many other grounds listed in the Constitution, that you should be free, you should live in dignity and integrity. And those points of departure, that people are entitled to their rights, you know, by virtue of being human, that for me is important. Now, when you then speak about my involvement in the work, I mean, for the last 20 years, I've invested my time, my work, my expertise into human rights, and that has taken value. And I was not in government, but I've been schooled in different ideologies, schooled in the understanding of what it really means for persons to really, that we say we want to free everybody. That you, it doesn't matter whether you're a person with disability, you're a person living with HIV, as long as the rights of people are at risk, we must fight for that, including of LGBTI community. Mm-hmm. So this appointment does not just solidify identity struggle, but it actually solidifies, you know, the quest of dealing with social fabrics that we've been struggling with for decades, for generations, even before me, that you lift intersectionality in addressing the dignity and integrity of people. And that's what it means. And in this case, the portfolio I'm in, the priority of constituency is women, it's youth, it's also persons with disability. And those women, youth, and persons with disability have got an intersectional lens that we constantly have to think about, that lives of people, lives of women can't be looked at as homogeneous, lives of young people can't be looked at as homogeneous, and neither of persons with disability. They are characterized by many things, class, race, geographical location, whether you're in the rural, whether you're in the township, you know, many things play a role. And intersectional lens is very important when you address issues that affect people.
So the portfolio in itself is actually quite broad, you know, so the issues of women, youth and persons with disability is quite big. Historically, we've also known that it's one of those portfolios where you don't have this massive budget. You don't have like an education budget or a health budget. And yet you have so much that you need to do in a country where, you know, we've been speaking even today about gender-based violence being one of those issues that the country needs to grapple with, because often these are crimes that are committed within the home. These are crimes that are committed by people that you are familiar with that are in the same roof as yourselves. So making it quite complex. It's not like, you know, you're chasing a criminal running around with a gun. These are people in our homes, making it quite difficult and I think quite complex for you to address some of these issues.
I think, you know, you're spot on. But I think the mandate of the department has been clarified over the years that, you know, because of the site of struggle that constantly these people that we are serving have been affected with. So if I told you talk about women, you know, just we are still in Women's Month and you and I, Pamela, are having this conversation. But it is 68 years ago when 20,000 women marched the streets of Pretoria, challenging the past laws, but also challenging gender inequality. And there were women who also organized before them, right? And the point here is that we are still talking gender equality, you and I, 68 years later. And it already tells you that the oppressive system are not changed overnight. So what we have done in this last 30 years of democracy is that there's always been development towards, you know, what is happening in democracy. But the mandate of the department that says that the oppressed or the systematic oppression that must still be dismantled must be the intentional approach of this government that is led by President Ramaphosa, that says that when you look at the mandate of the department, you must lead on socio-economic transformation and implement an empowerment that focuses on the participation of women, youth, and persons with disability. Right now, you and I are talking, we've got 45% of unemployment rate in South Africa. It's young people. So you constantly have to then say, our role in advocacy and mainstreaming, but it's also safeguarding the rights of people, of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. So the bottom line is that our mandate, we, as much as we may not be fully in, resourced, but our mandate is big because we have to secure and push for what women, youth, and really persons with disability, and including other marginalized persons, really deserve. So if we're talking economy, this economy must be in the hands of women, youth, and persons with disability. And I constantly remind people, there is no competition between women and men. We want men to continue championing whatever that they are championing, as long as we reduce patriarchy. Men must still play their role in families. They must still continue protecting families and so forth. But what we are doing when we speak about women empowerment and women's role is the focus of repairing the injustices of the past. That sidelined women, that killed or tried to erase women's potential. And that's why we are putting attention on women. So there's no, there mustn't become some inferior complex that grow between people saying, oh, you've given women more power. No, there's nothing of that. It's saying we want women to fully participate as equal members of society.
So stats, I say, obviously, you know, give us stats on the kind of demographics that we are looking at in this country. And constantly, of course, the numbers of persons with disability in this country is really small, actually, in relation to many other groups. But we are failing as a country, are we not, to be inclusive in how we plan, in how we interact, in how we bring them into societies, the economy, and many, many other things. Your take on that and how we should, you know, very quickly change that needle?
I don't think we can say that we are failing. I think South Africa is a very complex country with so many needs. I think one we must appreciate constantly, the data that says that South Africa is an unequal society, it's true. So when you deal with transformation and you don't have all doors that opens into transformation agenda, remember, everyone must be intentional in that approach. So you cannot have seven doors and only have two doors opening. Open all doors to transform society. And this unequal aspect, really, you feel it in our own society, predominantly black society. You predominantly find it in colored society, in the previously marginalized communities. And that's exactly because of oppressive system, because of the legacy of colonialism that we cannot avoid. Now, when we then say that we've adopted a constitution, and then we then say that this constitution is progressive, not everybody is starting from the same footing. So it then means that those who are not starting with a well-resourced support, don't expect them, if at all you are not oiling the pathway of that relay for them, to have or to produce similar results. So we must be intentional. We have seen progress in education sector, that we've seen young people, young black South Africans having opportunities. We produced graduates in this country. But right now, it's a mismatch because the very same graduates are not getting job opportunities. We've produced a health system that even globally, as much as we say our health system has been weakened, but when you look at other countries, they say South Africa's health system is very good. We've got good doctors, we've got good nurses, we've got good pharmacists. And what we have not been able to deal with is how much of the competing pandemics. You have a health system, but that is weakened with very shortened health professionals, but you also have growing pandemics like HIV, TB, you had COVID as a crisis. Now you're even dealing with gender-based violence that you are referring to. But gender-based violence, the more men don't change their behavior, that means we're going to spend $45 billion every year to respond to gender-based violence. Now, that's unacceptable. That $45 billion should be helping us to get more job opportunities for young people and grow our economy. But men are forcing us into a corner and forcing us to be dealing with their behavior that is not changing. So some of these things are social fabrics that must be prevented. And law on its own is not enough. It's one of the instruments. Mm. But we need social behavior to change. Men must change. Community members must change for us to reduce the social challenges that we're dealing with. So failure, I think we are being too harsh on ourselves, but we can do better as a country. And those pockets of excellence is what we then have to look into. Is this good? Can we upscale it? And if a program is good, we can upscale it. If a program is not working, we must not shy away to close a project and say this is not working. But we keep it open and it creates much more problems for us in society.
I'd like to take a quick break, if you don't mind. Deputy Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability, I'm speaking to Steve Letsike, and I do want you to be a part of this conversation. 086-000-0959. You can also send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. Broadly speaking, we're speaking about this portfolio, but I mean about other marginalized communities as well. And your other questions, you know, we were speaking earlier about the LGBTQ LGBTI plus communities, and how to also be inclusive of that community. How do we become familiar with the language of addressing people respectfully? How do you become familiar with terminologies that we may not have been familiar with? So all of that. And I think Steve is very willing to answer those questions when we come back on 086-000-959. And you can also send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. Steve Litzinger is my guest, Deputy Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability. It's a very, very broad conversation. We really just want to be speaking about communities that are marginalized and where do we begin to start addressing some of our own prejudice, and trying to be part of the solution rather than being part of the problem. Thank you very much, Steve, again, for making time for us. Deputy Minister, you spoke a little bit about systemic inequalities and being part of the bigger problem. It's a big chunk to try and deal with this inequality, as you said. You know, when you look at the number of years we've been trying to fight for, equality, gender equalities and so on, it's going to take a long time. In your view, you spoke of programs that sometimes should just be let go of. But in your view, holistically, even as communities at home, what should we be doing to start the work of addressing inequality in its all spectrums? Deputy Minister, are you still there?
Yes. Yes. Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Thank you.
Yes. Now, so I was saying that to really deal with discrimination, inequality, all of these issues, we need to pin it down to simple things. Mm. What must happen in our households, our homes, our schools, our churches, and so forth. Because it also requires a kind of a leadership approach. The people that centers around managing our households, managing churches, schools, and so forth, can create a culture of inclusivity. Mm. And it starts just by speaking. Mm. Because now one should never assume that we all can speak the same language of simplifying inclusivity. Mm. It starts around ethics. It starts around culture of friendship, of inclusivity, and understanding. And that's what we need to start listen up and speak up around that culture and addressing some of the concerns of our own people. Secondly, the leadership in community and society must lead into what builds or what is a pathway of social cohesion. Those kind of things really need us at the basic level. The second one, when you take it to a layer that speaks around institutions must comply. When we started this call, Pamela,
yeah,
we said what guards us,
yes,
is the laws.
Yeah.
Our country needs nothing more than the rule of law, mm, and we must not negotiate what these rules are, because I think it becomes a problem of discipline if at all we start to adjust laws to fit what our mind and what our environment is. No, these laws are laws that have been fought for because people died when we could not respect humanity. So for me, that rule of law, that kind of non-negotiating certain behaviors that puts others at risk, and that means we must comply with our laws. And other things that speaks about reporting. Should an incident happen, mm, we must not turn a blind eye. Mm. I grew up in a township when somebody was beaten around the corner, the community responded. Mm. But right now, nowadays, when somebody was beaten or somebody's being beaten up, people are so quick to pull up their cameras than to, mm-hmm, call somebody into order, mm-hmm, and say, sorry, mister, you are not going to do that. Mm-hmm. It's not acceptable. But people are not even pulling up their phones to call the police, by the way. They pull up phones to take a
video.
Camera. Take a video. And that's shocking for me. So yeah, those basic things, let's go back to the basics of compassion, of taking care of one another. I'm a community member. I don't live alone. I'm a part of society. So anything that is wrong, that is affecting my neighbor and my friend and my sister affects me directly. So when we then use slogans historically, which these slogans are still relevant now, that no one is free, including myself, is not free until everybody else is free. Those are important slogans that we must heed to, and we must see our role in society.
I've got Ndata Selby here, who's calling us from Orange Farm. Ndata Selby, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. How are you, Pamelo?
I'm well. How are you, Ndata Selby?
I'm blessed beyond measure.
Oh, fantastic.
Good evening, Minister.
Good evening, Mr. Selby. How are you?
I'm blessed beyond measure, Minister.
Thank you.
Minister, I want to agree with Pamelo when she says we have failed or we are failing when it comes to the demand of the disabled. And only when we can agree that we are failing is when we can do things, change and do things right. Minister, I was attending the Parliament for the Disabled. All the proposals that were made in that Parliament for the Disabled, none of them was met. I stopped to attend it because I realized that this is just a way of wasting money. It don't help anybody.
Is this a particular legislature, parliament session?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We need to agree that there's something that we are not doing right in order to start to look for a way of doing something right. But as long as we say no, we are not failing, then we will keep on failing. Thank you, Minister.
So Ndata Selby is living with a disability, and I suppose is speaking from his own personal experience.
Please, if your team can get hold of Ndata Selby's contact, I would like to follow up, because these parliament sessions are quite important. And I want to just say, I'm not saying that there's a full success. There are shortcomings. But I don't want us to overcloud our thinking as South Africans, where we actually miss the opportunity to actually see things that have worked. Mm. Part of why I'm raising this, particularly for persons with disability, there are laws and there are policies and there are some of the opportunities that we've done over the years, whether it's around what is negotiable in terms of access to facilities, there's ramps, there's all of these things that we ensured. Now, we have not fully completed the cycle of priorities that are needed by persons with disability. Now, this seventh administration has taken that. I can just say to you that I put this, and I said even to my team, we must reflect. Where are the shortcomings? What are the things we can do with our limited approach? But what are the other things that we can do with all stakeholders? Remember, any kind of response for a marginalized community doesn't need only one sector response. It needs every, what we call a whole society response. And part of what that this SLB is raising is coming from civil society or private sectors and so forth. We need to call everybody to say, this we have not done, and say this must be done by when. And I want to engage him to look at what has not been done, in which province it is, and then we then go back to the people who were committed to that.
One of the issues that usually comes up, particularly with, and we'll move on to other communities, but particularly with people, persons with disability, is even at the level of discussion, sure, that they're not included. That the discussions are happening about them without them. So whatever plans or policy changes that are brought about, they are in a way, yes, in good faith, but are not necessarily true to exactly what their needs are, because they have not been included in the conversations that fully, fully grasp what it is that they require. Yes, go ahead, Minister. Deputy Minister.
Pamela, I think this is why I say that there are pockets of excellence. There are also shortcomings. Now, before this portfolio,
yes,
I served in the National AIDS Council.
Yes.
Besides the organization I was working for, which was a human rights organization.
Yes.
But I served as a co-chair, together with the deputy president, leading the AIDS response.
Yes.
I was responsible for 18 sectors, which were part of civil society forums. Now, these 18 sectors, one of the sectors was people with disabilities. We had representatives of networks that was leading, and I can give you a list. I can tell you which support was ignited and which role they were playing. And these were not only at national, because the council is operating at three spheres, at national, at provincial, and also at local level. So there are pockets that it's one or two or three. It's not everybody on the table. But the leaders of these organizations were a part of that response. Now, I think the disconnection that we always see, and which is true, is that sometimes we get locked in the system of talking only to representatives or leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But an ordinary South African who is not in these systems of organizing does not find expression to make comments.
Mm-hmm.
And what Mr. Selby is raising, a typical ordinary person with disability is spoken for.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a gap. And that's what we don't want anymore. We want persons to have a voice wherever they are. And this is now even exploring ways. I spoke to a young woman by the name of Ebuho Mutubat. She experienced a disability a few years ago, and she became blind.
Mm.
She was a social entrepreneur, and she was affected, you know, by an illness that, ultimately, it turned her blind.
Mm.
But what was interesting in the conversation I had with her, and she said a simple thing is around access to information.
Mm-hmm.
Can we make certain things compulsory so that if I am a blind person, and she was equipped by a private sector to actually become an expert as a blind person, to now make sure that information online can be accessible to persons who cannot see. But that means you must be able to say on Kaya FM, if I go to Kaya FM website and I have a sight issue. Kaya, if I press it on Google and it leads me into that page, that means that the website must be able to play an audio so that I know what information is on the website. So the issue of access is a big one. The issue of affordability is another issue. And the issue of availability, which is things that when we speak about an ordinary South African, we must be prepared to transform these shortfalls to make sure that information, but also participation, meaningfully so, not a once-off thing, but meaningfully, people can participate where they are.
It's a very, very important point you're making, access, because access, as you said, I mean, sometimes can be very simple. It can be just common sense for those who are living with disability, whereas maybe it's not for those who are not. Sometimes even font sizes, for instance, where, you know, if you are struggling with your eyesight, you are not able to read certain things at a distance because no one cares to think that it's one of those problems. I know that, for instance, Blind SA, for a long, long time, was advocating for the rights of textbooks and so on, copyrights, and those were the issues that they were used to table, because it just became impossible for a school to acquire the textbooks for the students, because every single textbook needed to be, you know, they needed to get the copyrights. Well, they can't just make photocopies. It's not possible. They needed to get the Braille books, and they need to get the rights, and some books take a long time to get those rights. But sometimes it's just a matter of political will, where someone makes it possible. Not because it's not possible, it's just not an afterthought. And I think for many of these issues, it's an afterthought. It's not a primary thought.
Spot on. And I think that's a point. You remember earlier you were asking, what are these basic things?
Mm.
And I even spoke to you and I said, that shared leadership, you must be having that political will. Now, persons with disability have equal rights.
Mm.
Equal rights to enjoy that very same provisions that are in our constitution. And I mean, just in the sixth administration, one of the bills that were signed into law was making the 12th official language a sign language for persons. And you can imagine, if you make this law, you must immediately implement it. And unfortunately, we take long. We become so complacent to urgently prioritize this. Now, we have provisions. We no longer need new laws. We need implementation urgently. And South Africans, unfortunately, are also running out of patience.
Mm.
We run out of patience. And I think this is why even President Ramaphosa said the seventh administration must be an activist government.
Mm.
And that's the spirit that we are all working in, to say that we will ensure that our task is to fulfill the actions that we have committed towards the people of South Africa. So everybody must align, unfortunately. It can't be an afterthought. And I agree with you, Pamela. We cannot have aftermaths for South Africans. People must come first. Provisions that have been made available for persons must be done. That includes also that, don't think about persons with disability just that we are going to serve persons with... No, persons with disability also are smart people,
right.
That they have a right to economic opportunity, economic security, decent jobs. They have a right to be protected. They have the right to also be promoted and advanced like any other South Africans. And sometimes people think you are doing a favor. There's no favor that we're doing for persons with disability. Give persons with disability the equal rights they deserve, because they are entitled to them.
How? Just maybe let me ask you, and I know it's early days in your portfolio, but for instance, allocations of those special provisions, and I unfortunately I know it's called special provisions, but for instance, when a student is applying for NSFAS maybe they are given that they are successful and they can go through, in some instances you'd find that okay, the student would get a little pocket money and they would get their accommodation paid for and other things. And one of the other things that would be paid for would be tools of trade, the computer, for instance. With a person living with disability, I have heard countless times where they would say, I could not actually get to do the work because I didn't get the special type of computer I required as a person who is blind or something like that. My computer that I was given didn't comply with my needs, and it took a year for me to get what I needed. Are we sensitive enough to these needs and to the fact that it's not special? It's just what this particular person requires.
Yeah. You know, privilege is a big problem in our country. Unfortunately, you know, sometimes people who are managing certain things don't take into interest the requirement question. And you are raising a very critical point. And it's no different when you are dealing with persons even who are coming from transgender community, that you don't even check with the prefix that people use, or you don't even, you know, I mean, I can tell you simply even by myself that how many people have misgendered me just by virtue of appearance, right? And instead of ensuring that the integrity or the autonomy of persons can be respected. And what you're raising, that when you find persons with disability, and persons with disability never shy away from completing a form. When you say, I live with a disability, and you complete that form, that means already there are specific needs
yeah.
that you must tailor make my needs according. They must match it. So if I'm wheelchair bound, that means for my mobility, I must access things through a ramp.
Mm-hmm.
If at all I've got a hearing challenge, that means that I must be able to have signage because I depend on my eyes more than any other thing.
Mm.
If at all I am blind, that means I'm also depending on additional... Persons with disability need assistance. Sometimes it's not only just about what you give as a computer, it's also about a personal assistance for additional things. We are not sensitive as persons at times, and our own privilege of ability really ignores the needs. And these are things that we constantly are raising. I had a conversation with Minister Ramakgopa, Maropeng Ramakgopa, whose mandate also speaks about, it speaks about planning, monitoring, and evaluating. And we also had a conversation also with DPSA, which is part of mainstreaming, right? But in the monitoring, to say that a percentage of our population are persons with disability, then you're not going to, and you have to cater for it. So that means even in our budgeting, you have to integrate that percentage in our budgeting cycle so that you cater, you tailor make. Now, when we went into Cabinet Lekgotla that was led by President Ramaphosa, the action plan that is called the midterm development plan of the government of national unity. It says that you then need to look at what are some of the needs, the social needs that must be integrated. Persons with disability were a key. Young people were a key. Women were a key. Other vulnerable groups. So that means all departments have got that responsibility. So if people are not doing it, Pamela, we must then look at how effective is our reporting system and how responsive? Because if a young person then has to wait a year, they potentially can lose a whole year of curriculum and the opportunity to finish their studies. Now, we can't compromise those young people.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, at some point, the service point is happening at local level, and we know our current weaknesses, which we are trying to address. But I can then say to you, South Africans, we must work together. We've been responding to a whole lot of issues every single day. There's no single day that passes without I or the department from our social media accounts, including mine. I'm very much active. I'm a young person. I'm active on social media. So if somebody inbox me, I will respond. And I will bring it to their attention. And if it doesn't fall within my portfolio, I will not leave that young person. I'll bring it to the attention of a specific department to say, I've got a young person who's experiencing this issue. Can we deal with it? And I need feedback. And then I will follow through this matter until it's resolved. So I'm just typically saying that this is the attitude we want, even our officials. It shouldn't just be us as leaders or principals in government, but we must have every official that is compassionate. And that's a government that is working, and that's a community that is working for its own people.
Deputy Minister, let me take a quick break and I'll be back with more of these questions as we continue our conversation with the Deputy Minister of Women, Children, Youth and Persons with Disability. Steve Letsike is my guest. Deputy Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability is on the line with us. Deputy Minister, we spoke a little bit earlier and just briefly you touched on it, but I just want us to go into this gender discrimination, because it's one of those that I think society, first of all, needs to wrap its head around the fact that we all have agency in how we want to be identified. And that's my right. It's everybody's right. And once we can get over ourselves, then we will then deal with the fact that we need to be inclusive. We need to be aware of our language. We need to be aware of how we interact and how we respect the other. Just let's maybe talk about the etiquettes thereof, of making sure that our language is respectful and gives everybody agency and respect.
I mean, no doubt. But I think one thing that we must first get into our understanding is that gender discrimination in our country is illegal.
Mm.
And, you know, you can be taken to task if you continue to discriminate people. And it happens everywhere. It happens in the workplace. It happens in sport. It happens, you know, in churches. Everywhere we are finding this, and it's very problematic. And when you look at it, it takes different forms. You find young women who are exploited, you know, for sex in order for them to get jobs, or you get LGBTI persons who are discriminated because of their gender identity, or you see how different forms of gender discrimination that is happening and it's presenting itself differently. And some other workers, if you look at those in the workspace, will experience it because of their gender or something else. And that adds, including race and ethnicity for that matter. So we cannot accept the status quo that continues to undermine, including gender pay gap.
Mm.
I always make this example as a former soccer player myself, to say you have same rules, same soccer field, same rules, same ball, same results.
Mm.
But when we play and you take Banyana Banyana and Bafana Bafana, the best producing results are Banyana Banyana in this country.
Mm.
We've got champions now. In the last 10 years, Banyana Banyana has given us more champions than what Bafana Bafana can give us. But when you look at the pay gaps between Banyana Banyana and Bafana Bafana, it's already telling you that women are subjected to lower paying gap, pay results more than men. And that is a problem. And men are still carried in that higher standard. And they must get all the sponsorship, they must get all the support. And that is a typical example.
Mm.
Same rules, but different results.
Mm.
And that's what you're getting. A woman who will be working in a particular industry, whether it's a transport industry, logistic industry, corporate, or anywhere, and those pay gaps must come to an end.
Mm.
Women deserve to be paid equally. So those discrimination levels must never be allowed to continue.
I mean, it's very, very interesting. So let's talk about then how we start to accept, number one, that we are not, you know, the only ones who are privileged. Not one group is privileged enough to have space, as you said. It is illegal for you to discriminate. That's first of all. So then how do we proactively become inclusive in our language, in our approach? And when I say we, I mean as individuals, in our families, in communities, in companies, in how we as South Africans engage with one another.
Yeah, I think the first point of departure here is that we have to really agree on what are the rules of engagement.
Yeah.
First, workplace, school setup, churches, our homes, our streets have to be safe environment, a discrimination free. Once we can agree on these rules of engagement where we are required, remember, our constitution and our rule of law requires us to stand by the law that provides safe environment that is not hostile for people on the basis of their sex, gender, identity, or sexual orientation for that matter. Number two, we must speak out when there is discrimination at work, at school, anywhere else, including in our own homes. We must speak out. And we must build that resilience. We must build that self-esteem that helps people, you know, to speak out. Reporting some of these challenges will be helpful as well. Mm. If it's in the workspace, part of why you have HR, it's not HR to come and stand. You report to HR so that, you know, the rules and within the organization or company or any institution must be utilized. Secondly, it's really about what action can we do. So if it's more than I, Pamela, in the radio sector or in the television or broadcasting sector, If it's happening in the broadcasting sector and we are also picking it up in the private sector, it means it's happening. So how do we connect these different sectors to deal with actions that must be taken collectively so that we then can also share, but also at individual level? How do we deal with the person? Because that person can really affect and can really change a lot of things so that we can see. Reporting it, it also helps us with stats and it gives us evidence because our programming and what we need to push policy-wise and programming must be evidence-based. I do think that if we can get these simple things and we actually then take accountability and we hold people accountable. And this justice must not be just for a few. It must be justice for all and it must happen fast because any kind of delayed justice is a denied justice. And that's what we want to see, that our systems that safeguard us, if anything happens, they must be effective and they must work for us. And that's what we want to see. Judiciary in this country is very strong. If you put our laws, if you put our courts against anything, you can see it's very strong, but it must be working for people. A simple reporting a court order, and if it's not working with law enforcers and it's not responsive in the court system, then we have some problems in that system. We cannot ask people to get a protection order, but that protection order is actually protecting someone on paper, but not in real life. These are the things when you speak about challenges that women experience, marginalized people experience, is that we've made promises, but our lives are still at risk. And as government that cares for its people, that's a trajectory we want to change for South Africans.
I really, really appreciate all of this insight and all the best with your portfolio. We will be talking to you a lot more going forward because there's a lot to discuss. But thank you very, very much, Deputy Minister, for making time for us today.
Thank you so much, Pamela, and thanks to your listeners for engaging on this topic. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister of Women, Youth and Persons Living with Disability, as well as children as well. That is Steve Litsike. That brings us to the end of the show, folks. I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.